For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site. It's October 28th. We are in Treyaser and Zechariah. We're up to the last parak, the last chapter. Parak Yud Dalet, chapter 14. This is the Haftorah for the first day of Sukkot. Hine Yom Bala Hashem. Behold, there's a day that is coming for Hashem. V'chulak shalech b'kirbeich. And your spoils will be divided up within you, which means that we will be in Eretz Yisrael, and we will have reaped a lot of spoils from the Goyim who will attack us. We're going to win a war, and we'll be dividing up the spoils. But that war is going to be described a little bit here in Zechariah. Now, the war that is, it didn't say anything about a war. It said about spoils, but there will be a reference sort of to a war, as we'll see. And the war that we're referencing here, the Midrashim say, is Melchemes Gog Umagog. Melchemes Gog Umagog we learned about in Yechezkel. And there is a war in the future, the war of Gog Umagog. Gog is the name of a person, apparently. That it's a person who will be the leader of this massive army that will attack Eretz Yisrael. Magog is the name of where he is from. Gog me Eretz HaMagog is what it says in Yechezkel. Gog from the land of Magog. Everybody seems to agree that there is some sort of war that will take place in the future. Is it before Mashiach comes? Is it after Mashiach comes? Exactly, we don't know details like that. It's obscure, but there's some sort of war. Is it literally a war? Is it allegorically a war? We don't know that either. It seems like it's literally a war, but who knows? But there is definitely a description of a war. In Yechezkel, it's described in much more detail. Here, we're going to get some of the details around the war, rather than the war itself, but a little bit of the before and after of this war. The result of the war is going to be that we will have a lot of spoils, which we will divide up in Yerushalayim. It is significant to note that the Gemara in Sanhedrin tells us that the war of Gog Magog will consist of a massive army, well over million soldiers, just a gigantic army that is amassed from the nations of the world to attack Eretz Yisrael and Yerushalayim. And that the Gemara says that there were two other times in history when there was a massive army of the size of Gog Umagog that attacked, we'll call it the Jews or Eretz Yisrael. The second one is in the days of Chizkiyahu HaMelech, when Sanherev had conquered the entire world except for Yerushalayim. He's the one who took the Aseres HaShvatim, the 10 tribes, into exile. And then he eventually amassed a huge army and took it against Chizkiyahu in Eretz Yisrael. We learned about that and how Hashem made an ace and Chizkiyahu was saved and the entire army was decimated. And that is the incident where the Gemara says, "Bikesh HaKadosh Baruch Hu la'asos Chizkiyahu Melech HaMashiach." Hashem wanted to make Chizkiyahu into Mashiach, and Sanherev would be Gog Umagog. That war would have been the expression of this Gog Umagog. That was an actual war. There was an entire army that amassed itself against Eretz Yisrael and was decimated. It didn't happen then. But that was the scale we're talking about in terms of how many people would gather against Eretz Yisrael. That's the second time in history it happened. The first time is in this week's Parsha, in Parsha's Lech Lecha, with the war between the four kings and the five kings. That is not against the Jews, but after the four kings defeat the five kings, then they take Lot, and Avraham Avinu, almost single-handedly, he has Eliezer with him, they defeat the four kings. And the Gemara says the four kings' army was the size of Sanherib's army, which is in turn the size of this battle that is described first of all in Yechezkel and here, and other places in Navi as well, in this Milchemes Gog Umagog. So that Maisa Avo Simen Labanim, that what happens with Avraham Avinu in this week's parasha is a harbinger of what would happen in the future and has not yet happened. That there's an event evidently going to be something along these lines that's going to happen. Now, in not knowing how it's going to appear in the future, we do know that ultimately Gog Umagog will be destroyed. That we know. We do know that we will ultimately be saved, but exactly how it will happen, what the sequence of events is, that we don't know. The story of Avraham Avinu and the story of Chizkiyahu HaMelech are not exactly the same. With Avraham, they took Lot, and then Avraham and Eliezer attacked and defeated them soundly. With Chizkiyahu, Sancheiriv was systematically defeating the Jews, including taking the Aseres HaShvatim into Galus. And then when he attacked Chizkiyahu, Chizkiyahu didn't fight back. Rather, the Malach Gabriel came and struck down the whole army in one fell swoop.
Where was Sancheiriv from?
So he was from Ashur. Ashur is Assyria. So what is it? I mean, the fact that the Gemara says Hashem wanted to make Sancheiriv Gog Umagog, so the names obviously would have to be worked out. I don't know how that fits. So clearly there is a way of making it work out, but I don't know how. So in that case, there was no actual war. There was an almost war, meaning there was a siege of Yerushalayim, and the Malach came and just decimated the whole army. So what will it look like in the future? We don't know. But we do know there is something along those lines that is supposed to happen sometime in the future. Pasuk Beis, verse 2, Va'asafti es kol hagoyim el Yerushalayim. I will gather all the nations to Yerushalayim, meaning they're going to attack. La'milchama, for a war. V'nil kedah ha'ir, the city will be captured. It will fall. V'nashasu habatim, and the houses will be razed. They'll be knocked down. V'hanashim tishachavna, the women will be molested. V'yatza chatzi ha'ir bagola, half the people of the city will be taken into exile. V'yeser ha'am lo yikares min ha'ir, but the rest of the nation will not be cut off from the city. We'll come back to this in a moment. V'yatza Hashem v'nilcham bagoyim ha'im, and Hashem will come out and he will make war with those nations, kiyom hilachamo biyom kirov, like the day that he waged war on the day of kirov. Kirov means getting close. So that is a reference, as the Medrash says, to Kriyas Yamsuf. Like over there it says, ufaro hikriv, Paro came close, and Hashem wiped out the Egyptians. So just as he made war there in Kriyas Yamsuf, the splitting of the sea, and destroyed the Egyptians, so too he will make war with the nations that attack us with Milchemes Gog Umagog. Now, in Pasuk Beis in verse 2, it seems like the nations that attack will first be successful in their attack. Unlike the story with, unlike with Chizkiyahu, where they didn't actually get into Yerushalayim. They did conquer the other Jewish people, but they didn't get into Yerushalayim. But here, evidently, they're going to actually get into Yerushalayim and do some bad things. So Rashi explains that the reason for this is that otherwise the non-Jews would be able to argue and say, we didn't come for war. We came for peace. We came to bow to Hashem. That's why we came. Since we're talking about a time when we Jews will be in Eretz Yisrael, evidently there already will be some element of revelation of Hashem. So if they are not given a chance to show their true colors, then they could argue, we didn't come for war. So Hashem is going to let them have some success in what they're trying to do in order to show that they clearly deserve to be punished, and at which point Hashem will then make war and punish them. Do we take the words literally that about the houses and the women and the people going into exile? Obviously, it could be literal. It could also mean something else, which we don't know. Some other way of explaining those words. Whatever it is, the general point is that they will be somewhat successful at first in order to show what their true intentions are. And then Hashem is going to decimate them, as it says, he's going to make war, as with Kriyas Yamsuf. Now, Kriyas Yamsuf is a significant reference because Kriyas Yamsuf is the greatest revelation of Hashem ever in the history of the world, with the exception of Matan Torah. And obviously, I'm not talking about creation. But with the exception of Matan, since creation, other than the giving of the Torah itself, which was the greatest revelation of Hashem, other than that, Kriyas Yamsuf is the greatest revelation since the creation of the world. Which means that in the future, Hashem's revelation will be on the level of Kriyas Yamsuf. Now, as we've explained before, the difference between Nisim, miracles that happen with Hashem's full revelation versus less of a revelation of Hashem, that's the way that that is expressed, is that when there is less of a revelation, that Hashem makes the miracles happen through an intermediary, through an angel, like with Chizkiyahu, where it was the Malach Gavriel that decimated the army rather than Hashem himself. Even though the Malach Gavriel is the agent of Hashem and does whatever Hashem tells him to do, but what Chazal mean when they say it that way is that when it's done through an angel, it is not as perfect as when Hashem does it, so to speak, himself. That's why in the Haggadah, the author of the Haggadah makes such a point with Makas Bechoros that it's Ani Velo Malach, Ani Velo Saraf. Hashem says, I will kill the firstborn, not an angel, not a fiery angel, not an agent, it will be me. Anihu v'lo acher. The reason why that's emphasized is because when Hashem does it, then the perfection comes out. It's much more perfect a job than when it is done through an intermediary. It's not that the intermediary is messing up, it's that when Hashem uses an intermediary, he deliberately makes it not as perfect. And that's the whole point of an intermediary, is that it should not be as perfect as when he does it himself. When he does it himself, it means that he is acting in a manner that is closest to us with a greater revelation of him. And therefore, it is, by definition, perfect. Perfect means, what does perfect mean? So perfect means that it is perfectly midah keneged midah. That the measure for measure, as we know, Hashem operates with the system of midah keneged midah, measure for measure. That's how he operates. We see that less when Hashem is more distant from us and from the world. We see that more when Hashem is closer to us and to the world. So when it is Hashem himself who wages the war, then the midah keneged midah will be perfect. So I don't know what that's going to look like in the future, but is it just as an example, as we've explained before with Kriyas Yamsuf, as an example, as the Egyptians were being tossed about in the water and the water was actually whipping them around, and they were being hurt before they were drowned, the Jews were able to see a perfect retribution. So if there was a Jew who had, for example, been whipped by an Egyptian, and the Jew therefore had a laceration on his arm because of the Egyptian, the Jew would actually see that very Egyptian get slammed by the water and have a laceration on his arm in the same way that he gave one to the Jew. It was perfect midah keneged midah, perfect measure for measure, the Jews saw in Kriyas Yamsuf. That's why the Pasuk says they were able to, so to speak, point and say, Zeh keli ve'anveyu, this is my God, and I will glorify Him. What do you mean, this is my God? They're pointing, what are they pointing to? They're pointing to water. Water is not Hashem, but it means they were able to see Hashem's presence, so to speak, in a way that had never been revealed before. And in the future, that is going to happen again, just as with Kriyas Yamsuf, that's what's going to happen on this particular battle as well, with Milchemes Gog Umagog. So now, as I said in Yechezkel, the battle itself is depicted here. It's more of some of the miraculous things around the battle. Pasuk Dalet, verse 4, Va'amdu raglav bayamahu al har hazeh sim, and his legs, so to speak, of course, kiviyachol, of Hashem, will stand on that day on har hazeh sim, the Mount of Olives, Asher al pnei Yerushalayim mikedem, which is on the face of Yerushalayim to the east, the mountain is to the east of Yerushalayim, v'nivka har hazeisim mechetzio, and har hazeisim will split down its middle, mizracha vayama, from east to west, ge gedolah ma'od, a great big valley, umash chatzi ha'har tzafona, half the mountain will move to the north, v'chetzio negba, and half the mountain will move to the south. There's going to be a major geological upheaval, and this mountain will split in half, and it is to the east of Yerushalayim. It will split in half, and half the mountain will move north, half the mountain will move south, and there'll be a large valley now down the middle where the mountain used to be.
Does that mean it's going to be closer to the face of Mikdash? If the mountain splits, that southern half of the mountain.
No, because the mountain is already to the east of Yerushalayim. So if you're facing Yerushalayim, here's Yerushalayim, the mountain is here. So the mountain is going to split. Half of it will move north, and half of it will move south.
Oh, so it's splitting that way.
Right. So there's a valley now between the mountain toward Yerushalayim, from the east to the west towards Yerushalayim.
And what happens to all the bodies on the mountain?
That's a great question. I don't know the answer to that question.
What
I mean,
the question? The bodies that are buried on that mountain?
What happens to everybody who's buried there? Right. Don't know.
There's a lot of Gedolim and Yeah. Medium.
Yeah, I assume it is because of this pasuk that he became the minhag to bury people there, but I don't know. So,
why would you?
Yeah, why? I don't know. I'm sure there's, you know, Kabbalistic things, but I don't know. Now, it says that his legs will stand on that day. Hashem does not have legs. So it is only meant to bring out something in human terms so we can have some sort of understanding of what's going on. So as you picture a powerful warrior standing in battle, and a powerful warrior that is not going to get knocked over. So he plants himself with his legs. That's his the sturdiness. And he wages war, and certainly the imagery is that as he embeds his legs there, it's going to force that mountain apart. The strength of the warrior is going to force the mountain apart, break it in half. So that's the imagery. But why do we need that imagery? I mean, just why do you need to mention Hashem's legs when he doesn't have any? What is being brought out by the raglayim, the legs of Hashem? So the term regel, raglayim, legs, is always associated with change. If you think about it, there's a big difference between us in this world and the malachim, the angels. The angels also have legs. But there it says in the pasuk in Yeshaya, "Viraglehem regel yeshara." Their legs are one straight leg. Their legs always remain together. Their legs also don't bend. That's because angels do not have they don't eat, so there is no digestion. There is no reproduction. There is no rest or sleep. They never lie down. And they don't walk the way we do. Now, angels do move from place to place, but that's with their wings. They fly. It's a different form of movement. But the movement of legs is always associated with change, which is this world. The other worlds don't change. Now, they do change based on what happens here. But things here are what causes change anywhere else. We're the ones who have free will. When we exercise our free will, which we do all the time, we are constantly changing this world, either in subtle ways or sometimes in dramatic ways. And in turn, when our world gets affected and therefore changed, that affects all the other worlds that there are, the other realms that there are. So we're in the driver's seat, because we're the ones who can make change. This is the Olam HaAsiya. This is the world of doing. As we know, once a person moves to the other side, after 120 years, they can no longer change themselves. They can only be changed based on what happens in this world. So the implication of calling Hashem's legs, which again, he doesn't have any, but the message that has been given over here is that there's going to be significant change in this world. Hashem is going to make things move and change in this world with this battle. A major, major watershed event is this battle, and the splitting of the mountain signifies this change. Pasuk Hey, verse 5, Venastem Gei Harai, and the valleys between the mountains will be closed up. Now, that we know the pasuk says Yerushalayim's Harim Savivla. Yerushalayim has many mountains around it. We also know this from having been there. We know that Yerushalayim has many mountains around it. It's not an easily accessible city. So if you picture again Yerushalayim with Har HaZeisim to its east, so north and south of Yerushalayim there are also mountains, but there's valleys between Har HaZeisim and the mountain to the north of Har HaZeisim, and there's a valley between Har HaZeisim and the mountain to the south of Har HaZeisim. Meaning there's passes between the mountains. Well, when Har HaZeisim splits and half the mountain moves north and half the mountain moves south, what had been a valley before will now be covered with half the mountain. The valley that had been between the Har HaZeisim and the mountain to the north of it will no longer be a valley, because half of Har HaZeisim is going to move north and connect itself to the mountain that is already to the north. Same thing to the south. And instead, there's now going to be a valley between the two halves of Har HaZeisim. So that's what it means here, Venastem Gei Harai, and the valleys that had been between the mountains will close up. Ki Agia Gei Harim El Atzal, because the valley of the mountains will now come together. They will move to the side and come together. So there will be a change again geologically. There's going to be a change. Venastem, and you will run away. This is going to be a frightening event, which you would think it's a frightening event when a mountain gets split in half. Kasher nastem mipnei harash, just as you ran away because of the earthquake, bimei Uziah melech Yehuda, in the days of Uziah, the king of Yehuda. Uba Hashem Elokai, and Hashem my God will come, Kol Kedoshim Imach, all of the sanctified ones with you, with Hashem, he is going to cut. So, there's going to be this frightening event. New valleys will open up, old valleys will be closed up, and you're going to run in fear, just as you ran in the days of Uzziyahu, the king of Yehuda, when there was an earthquake. Now, we learned about the earthquake in the days of Uzziyahu. You'll recall that that incident happened when Uzziyahu, who was a tzaddik, but he then got the idea that he should be the Kohen Gadol as well. He felt that that would be the proper honor of Hashem. And when he attempted to act as the Kohen, so then he got Sara'as. And then he did tshuva for the rest of his life. For the next 25 years, he built a home in the graveyard so that he would always remember, because he Sara'as stayed with him until the day he died. So he, in order to remember his Aveira, he built himself a house in the graveyard and remained there until the day he died. And Uzziyahu was a tzaddik, he made a mistake, he did tshuva for it, but that is what happened with him. When he did this, when he did work in the Beis HaMikdash, he tried to do work in the Beis HaMikdash, other than, besides getting tzara'as, there was a major earthquake. There was a major earthquake. So we learned, this is when Yeshaya the prophet, the Navi, gets his first nevuah ever, and it's the Haftorah that we read in Parshas Yisro, and he sees Sraphim, he sees fiery angels that want to burn up Uzziyahu because he tried to be a Kohen when he's not. The ground tries to swallow him up, just as the ground swallowed up Korach, but in the end, he gets Tzara'as, he does not get burnt up, and the ground does not swallow him. So there is the earthquake that takes place. This earthquake is referenced as well in the book of Amos, which we had earlier in Treyasar. Amos, his nevuah takes place, it says, 2 years prior to the Ra'ash, 2 years before the earthquake. This earthquake was, again, a watershed event. People knew about this earthquake. This was a significant, significant event. So the Hashem says, you're going to run just as you ran in the days of Uzziah, the king of Yehuda, where you ran because of the earthquake. Now that earthquake was an earthquake that had threatened to swallow up Uzziyahu, but it did not. In the end, Uzziyahu got tzara'as, did tshuva, and that was the end of it. I mean, the tzara'as lasted the rest of his life, but there was no death. There was no the ground didn't swallow him. The fire didn't burn him. Here, you're going to run, thinking that this is dangerous for you. Thinking this is scary and frightening, you're going to run. But just as in the days of Uzziah, the king of Yehuda, it did not hurt Uzziyahu, here as well, it's not going to hurt you. Over there, there was damage that took place because of the earthquake. Perhaps, it doesn't tell us, but it seems like there was significant damage because of the earthquake. And here, it seems that, as we said, there's a geological upheaval. But nevertheless, we're not talking about the people getting killed, rather being frightened because of the earthquake. The Gemara in Maseches Brachos, both in the Bavli and the Yerushalmi, discuss why do earthquakes happen? Anytime you see a Gemara like this, it does not necessarily mean why does every earthquake happen, but when an earthquake does occur, what are the trigger points for an earthquake? What types of behaviors of human beings bring about earthquakes? So the Gemara has a few suggestions. One, the Gemara suggests, is when people neglect to take truma and meiser from their grain, then an earthquake occurs. That's one suggestion the Gemara makes. Another suggestion the Gemara makes is that earthquakes come about because of the terrible abomination of Mishkav Zachar. Mishkav Zachar is homosexuality. That brings about earthquakes, the Gemara says in the Yerushalmi. And finally, the Gemara says based on this pasuk here, that it is machlokes that brings about earthquakes. Because with Uzziyahu, the king of Yehuda, that was at its core a machlokes, because Uzziyahu wanted to take the kuhuna, and the kohanim were fighting with him, so you can't do that. So there was friction, and the Gemara says that brings about earthquakes when there is significant machlokes. Pasuk Vav, verse 6, V'haya bayomahu, and it will be on that day, lo yi'or, there will not be light, yikaros v'kipaon. Those words are not easy to translate. The general idea is that it will be like a grayish light. Not bright light, but like a grayish light. Yikaros would be like a faint light, and kipaon means like a mist.
It's like a fog.
Fog, right. So it's not bright light. So we know that the future is always characterized as a bright light. For instance, in Parashas Bereishis, we know that Hashem created light on the first day, that there was or, and then Hashem hid that light. After the 6 days of creation, He put it away for the tzaddikim, for la'asid lava, for the future. The future is always characterized by that light of Bereishis. The way the Gemara says it is that the light of the day of the sun today, that the light of Bereishis was seven times the light of today. It was seven times that light. What does it say it? How does it go? 1 second, let me think for a second. Yeah, the way it goes is that the light of Bereishis, figure how we get there. The light of the future is 7 cubed. It's 7 times 7 times 7. 343 is 343 times the light of today. So that the light of, I think it goes like this, the light of Bereishis is 7 times 7. It's 49 times, not 7 times, 49 times regular light. And then in the future, it's 7 times that. That's, I believe, how it's broken down. Whatever it is, the future light, the future time is characterized as being a very, very, very bright light. Obviously, it's going to be a light that we can handle. A person can't handle such bright light today. But then we will be given the ability to handle that kind of light. So that'll be in the future, that there'll be such bright light that will be, that will characterize that time. So,
spiritual bright light, or is it because the moon was as
large as the sun and shining? Has to do with the moon and sun. I don't know. It doesn't say exactly how it's going. It says the sun is going to get brighter, the moon's going to get brighter, everything's going to get brighter. Right. I think you're right. I think the moon becomes bright like the sun exceeds what it is now, everything gets much brighter. So when it says that on that day there will not be light, it doesn't mean there won't be light. It means it won't be the bright light of the future. It will be brighter than it is now, but not to the extent of what it will be ultimately. Yikaros v'kipaon, it's going to be a faint light and a fog, meaning it'll be brighter than now, but compared to what it ultimately will be, it will be more like a faint light and a fog. And then it says, again, talking about that time of sort of light, but not really, really light. Pasuk Zayin, verse 7, V'haya yom echad, it will be one day. That period of time will last for one day. Hu yivadah la Hashem, it will be known to Hashem, lo yom, Velo Laila, not day and not night. It won't be the day, meaning it won't be bright like the ultimate future, but it won't be night like it is now. Our days now are compared to night, because it is prior to the time of Hashem's revelation. V'hayala Eser, if it'll be towards evening, which means towards the end of that day, or that's when the brightest light will happen. So that there'll be a period of time called a day, which will be brighter than now, but not the brightness of the future, not the ultimate brightness. That will last for a day. Towards the end of that day, then there'll be a huge increase in the light and will reach the ultimate brightness, which means the ultimate revelation of Hashem.
That's a chesed. That gives time to adjust.
I assume that's true. Now, the Mefarshim here say that one day means 1,000 years. Because one day, we know Hashem's days are 1,000 years. So, does it literally mean 1,000 years? Does it mean a period of time similar? I don't know. But this one day is a period of time that is going to be a transition time, well said, between where we are now and the ultimate revelation of Hashem, the ultimate brightness. We mention this phrase in the Haggadah. Again, on Pesach night, we say, Karev Yom Shehu Lo Yom V'lo Laila. Bring close the day that is neither day nor night. What do we mean by that? We mean this Pasuk. We're asking for Hashem to bring Mashiach and hasten the day that is neither day nor night, which is this reference right here. That's what whoever wrote that poem in Nirtza, at the end of the Haggadah, that is what he was referring to, is this phrase here. Pasuk Ches, verse 8, V'haya bayom hahu, and it will be on that day, Yetzu mayim chayim Yerushalayim, then mayim chayim, which means spring water, will come out of Yerushalayim, Chetzyam el hayam akadmoni, half of the water will go towards the eastern ocean, which means they'll flow east out of Yerushalayim, which means they'll head towards the Indian, what we call today the Indian Ocean, the Chetz Yom El Hayom Acharon, and half towards the ocean on the other side, which is the Mediterranean Sea. Bakayitz uvachoref, yeah, that waterway will be in the summer and in the winter. It will never stop. There will be an abundance of water that will come out of Yerushalayim, which signifies bracha, and that water will flow both east and west. There will be a waterway. Normally, rivers only flow to one ocean, because rivers start high and gravity takes them wherever they go. And rivers all empty into, each river empties into different oceans. Every ocean has different rivers that empty into it. But rivers only empty into one ocean. Unless man changes that, that's the way rivers go. This waterway, which will start with an underground spring, which will come out in Yerushalayim, will then empty in two directions. It'll be a powerful, powerful flow of water, described in Yechezkel as starting out as a trickle, but then getting stronger and stronger and becoming extremely powerful, this waterway, way too powerful for a person to swim it, that they would have to take a boat to cross the waterway. It'll be a very, very powerful, powerful river that will flow in two directions. It will flow from Yerushalayim to the east, to the ocean, and to the west, to the ocean, in both directions.
Rabbi, is this going to be because the mountains split, or we don't know if the two are...
I assume they're related. I assume that valley between the north and south of the mountains, that's where the water is going to go. That's what I assume.
Okay. And also, in the Beis Hamikdash, when they were doing the sacrifices, they had some water
yes.
that they would... overflow it to clean the area.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is that going to be from this mayam?
It doesn't seem that way. That water, there is a waterway that the Beis HaMikdash had that naturally flowed through the Beis HaMikdash. It went across the Azara, and it came in and then went out. And if they wanted to clean the marble floor of the Beis HaMikdash, they did sponja, so they would block up the exit of the water, so it would overflow its walls, and then we'd use that water to clean the Beis HaMikdash, and then unstop it, and the water would flow away.
So those are two separate paths.
So this water is going to come out of the Kodesh HaKadoshim.
Oh, okay.
So we don't know exactly how, what, or whatever, but it says it's going to originate in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and then come through the Beis HaMikdash, moving out from the Kodesh HaKadoshim down Har HaBayis, down the Temple Mount, and as it moves, it's going to expand and get bigger and bigger and stronger until it becomes a powerful, powerful river that again will flow in two directions. That's the way it's described. How that's going to happen, I don't know, but I imagine the splitting of the mountain has something to do with it. It just seems that all the geological upheaval is going to make things happen. Of course, this is significant. As we know, Eretz Yisrael is always, always hanging in the balance when it comes to water, as we know. It's always a major issue. And that in the future, it seems like the just as Hashem's presence will be revealed, and Hashem's bracha will, of course, overflow to Yerushalayim more than anywhere else, then Yerushalayim will be, not only will it not need water, it will be the source of water, as water will come out of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. And here we have a very, very famous Pasuk Tes, verse 9, V'haya Hashem l'melech al kol ha'aretz, Hashem will be king over the whole world, B'ayom ahu yeh Hashem echad, u'shmo echad, on that day Hashem's name will be one, and His name will be one. The Gemara asks what should be the obvious question, which is, what do you mean on that day Hashem will be one? And today He's not one? Okay, we say every day, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, Hashem is one. He's not going to be one then, He is one now. So the Gemara says that now, when good things happen, we say Baruch HaTov VeHameitiv, we bless Hashem for the goodness. When Chas V'Shalom, bad things happen, we say Baruch Dayan HaEmes, the true judge. That is because in our limited capacity to understand things, because we are distant from Hashem, when things happen that appear bad, we may intellectually know that everything is good, but we certainly don't know how to see that, and therefore it is impossible for a human being to see the good, to really see it. One can believe it intellectually, but to actually see it, we can't. And therefore, when bad things happen, we make a bracha of Dayan HaEmes. But in the future, everything will be hatov v'hametiv. We'll be able to look back at all the calamities that befell us, all the bad things that happened, and we'll be able to say, oh, I understand now why that happened. That makes sense. We needed that to happen. That was very important. If it wasn't for that, we'd be in trouble. We'll be able to see it all. Everything will be laid out before us in a way that everything will make sense. And therefore, everything will be hatov v'hametiv, because we will see why it really was the best for us, collectively, individually. We'll be able to see it then. We can't see it now, but we'll be able to see it then. So that's what it means, the Gemara says, when it says, on that day Hashem will be one, it doesn't mean that Hashem is not one now, but it means His oneness will be evident. Where now, one could chas v'shalom make a mistake and think, well, you know, Hashem is not acting in a unified manner. This is bad. This is good. Like, where is the oneness? So we can't see it, even though we know it, but we can't see it. But in the future, we will be able to see it. It will be clear to us, the oneness of Hashem.
Is that the light that gives us more?
I imagine the light is the case. And that light is certainly symbolic of Hashem's presence in the world. Once Hashem is known and present, and we can see, as we said, the midah keneged midah, the measure. Once His Shechina is so accessible, everything fits. Everything falls into place. It's our confusion in all areas today is because we're distant from Hashem. It's not just today; just today, it's worse than it's ever been. But it's because we're distant from Hashem. The closer we get to Hashem, the more things become clear rather than obscure. The Gemara asks the same question on the next part of the Pasuk, Ushmo Echad, His name will be one. Again, His name will be one, and right now it's not one, the Gemara asks. So the Gemara says, today, as we know, when you see Hashem's name, Yud, and then a Hey, and then a Vav, and then a Hey, Yud, Kei, Vav, Kei, like in this Pasuk here, we pronounce that as if it was written Aleph, and then a Dalet, and then a Nun, and then a Yud. That's the way we pronounce it. But in the future, then we will pronounce Hashem's name the way it is written. The pronunciation of Hashem's name will be the same as it, the way it's written now, rather than the way we do it, which is that we do not enunciate it the way that it is written. So we're not allowed to enunciate it the way that it's written. The Gemara says that lo kishani nichtav ani nikra. You don't read Hashem's name the way it is written. That's a Gemara, and it's based on a pasuk in Parshas Shmos where Hashem says to Moshe Rabbeinu, "Ze shmi le'olam. This is my name forever." But le'olam, forever, is spelled with vav vav. And therefore you could read it le'olam. Le'olam means to hide. This is my name that should be hidden. V'zezichri l'dor dor, and this is my remembrance forever, that you should, for all generations, you should change the, don't read it the way it's written, but rather read it as Aleph Dalet, as Ado. So, but in the future, then Hashem's name will be enunciated the way it is written. So, what is the difference between Aleph and Dalet and Nun and Yud and Yud Kei Vav Kei? So the difference, or at least I shouldn't say the difference, but one difference is Aleph Dalet means master, from the word Adnus, Adon. Adon means a master. So it means my master, our master, that's what it means. That name, Aleph Dalet and Nun and Yud, that name brings out the mastery of Hashem. The fact that we are all under His control. He's in charge. That's what that word implies. The Yud and then a Hey and then a Vav and then a Hey implies, or what it is made up of, it's a contraction really, of Haya Hove Yihye. He was, He is, and He will be. The timelessness of Hashem is embedded in that name, Yud Kei Vav Kei. The timelessness of Hashem. That He is in control of everything, that we can access and easily, but we can connect to that concept fairly easily, even in our obscured world, because we can say Hashem is running the show. This appeared bad to me. This appeared good to me. I believe firmly Hashem is in charge. I don't know why He's doing what He's doing, but He's doing it. I don't know what kind of message He's trying to give me, but He's doing it. It's all coming from Hashem. The good and the bad, what I'm happy about, what I'm sad about, it's all coming from Hashem. That much a person can access even in our obscured world. But in order to be able to see why everything is good, you have to have a much bigger picture. We are so limited in what we can see. We only see what's in front of us. We only see where we are. We only see when we are. Every moment of our day, we can only see what's in front of us. The Gemara says, "Ein lo ledayan al mashein of roos." The judge can only deal with what he can see. That's a human limitation that we have. And because of that limitation, therefore, to connect the dots between what happened here, what happened there, and what happened in the another part of the world, and what happened in another part of the world, and what happened 100 years ago, what happened 10 years ago, what's going to happen 50 years from now, we have no way of connecting all of that. All the events that go on in the world, all the events that have gone on and will go on in history, we can't possibly connect those dots. And therefore, we can't see why is this thing good? Why doesn't seem to fit? Because we're looking in a very, very narrow part of the picture. As we know, the famous analogy that if you have a beautiful, beautiful sculpture, beautiful picture, but you zero in on a tiny, tiny piece of it, it doesn't look like anything. And you can't see it. You step back and you can see the whole, oh, it looks beautiful, it's gorgeous. So it's a tapestry. So that is the mashal here as well. In the future, we'll be able to pronounce the name of Yud-Keh-Vav-Keh, which is Ha-Yehovah-Ve-Yeh, was, is, and will be, because we will be the beneficiaries of having the bigger picture. Hashem's revelation will make us understand and see everything broadly, and we'll be able to say, oh, that's why that happened. Oh, that makes a lot of sense now. Now it all fits. So that is reflected in Hashem's name being Echad. It's not that it's not Echad now, but it will be recognized as Echad better than it is now. That is part of what will happen in the future, and is reflected in this pasuk. Okay, let us read. We're going to have to stop soon. So let's read just a little further, just to finish this thought. The pasuk says, "Yisov kol haaretz." Well, you know what? Maybe we'll save this. We'll save this. This is still a little bit more of the geological piece. That's why I wanted to do it. But I think better. Let's leave this for now. It's going to talk about the expansion of Yerushalayim itself, which we'll discuss. And then also what's going to happen to the nations. There's still obviously more to do. So Mitzvah Hashem, next time, our plan will be to finish Zechariah Mitzvah Hashem next week, which would leave us one more safer for Treyas. There's still Malachi to do.
Didn't you say here at the beginning of the year that Hashem gathered all the nations to Israel to fight with us?
Yeah.
For that reason?
Yeah, that's right.
To prove that they...
Yeah, he's going to have them come. He's going to enable them to come to Yerushalayim so that they will show their true colors, and then he will decimate them. That's right.
Yeah. I just have a question. So if they're coming and they show their true colors and Hashem takes care of them, then who are the ones that sit in the sukkah and kick it?
Good. So we'll see. There's going to be more. That's why I stopped before that point. But there's going to be more discussion of the nations, what happens to them. They're not all going to be destroyed. A lot of them will be, but...
I'm just wondering if this new water source has anything to do with us finding the Leviathan. Right? Because he's in the water.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah. For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.